You're with Karen, accentuating the positive on FM 99.3. And I have with me on the phone beautiful healer Nicole Bayliss, who is a holistic counsellor, Reiki master and NLP practitioner. She lectures and holds workshops in meditation and creating the life you want. Nicole is passionate about assessing others to reach their full potential in all areas of life. She lives and practices in Mossman, Sydney. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, Karen. Thank you for having me on the show.
Ah, look, it's a pleasure. And we're going to talk about your new book, which is called 5 Steps to Finding Love and a Holistic Guide for Women. Now, Nicole, what made you write about finding love?
Well, Karen, I've met so many women in my work who the first thing that came up for them always was, I can't meet anyone. I can't find anyone to love.
Yeah, I've had that question a lot as well. It's a big one, isn't it?
It is. It is. I also get it from men sometimes, but it seems to be particularly prevalent with women. And I found that there were 5 things. I started noticing patterns of what they would say or what the issue would be. The first one was issues around self-love. The second one, they tended to have a belief that there were no good men out there.
Yeah.
So a scarcity mentality around that. They had unhealed wounds of the past that were sabotaging them. They had a reluctance to take responsibility for the choices they'd already made. It was sort of everybody else's fault. I'm not saying everyone had, they had at least one of these things going on. And lastly, an over-attachment to the desire for a mate.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, it seemed to be like they focused intently on the one thing they didn't have. Often
yep.
They had a lot of other things in their lives, but they weren't being in the gratitude of that. They were more in the I don't have.
Yes, absolutely.
And the more we focus on the don't have, the more we don't have.
Well, that's exactly right, isn't it? What you focus on, you bring into your life. So if you focus on not having something, you'll just have less of it. And you know what I found too with women and with men is that they've been so hurt in the past. They want love, but they're reluctant to go there because they think love hurts.
Yes. And I think the older we get, the worse it gets, the more vulnerable we get to pain. And so in my book, I've got a lot of exercises about getting rid of that pain because that is baggage.
Exactly.
People often think that dependents are baggage or your past is baggage. None of your past is baggage. It's the feelings you hold around your past that's baggage.
The beliefs you hold around it. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. This book's very much around that and around clearing and forgiveness. Forgiveness is a very big one as well.
So you find that in your practice, you have a lot of women coming to you saying, I feel very alone and I'd like a partner in my life.
Yes.
I've got a lot of healer friends and psychics. And interestingly enough, that is the number one question that women ask when they go to see a psychic, especially. They want to know when my lover is coming in.
Yes.
I speak to all my psychic friends who do like psychic readings and tarot cards and all that sort of thing. And women ask that question. It's really interesting.
It is always the number one. Career's probably second.
Yes.
Health is always last.
Yeah, it's interesting. Number one question is love. Where's my love? The next one's where's the money? And the next one is, am I going to die?
Yes. Yes, exactly. But it's amazing because I suppose love is the most important thing. And it's always the number one question for anyone and for men as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you've got at the beginning of the book, the introduction, it says, I do not seek, I find. A quote by Pablo Picasso. Oh, I love this. I love this. The inspirational artist Pablo Picasso knew something of immense importance. The more we search for something, the more it eludes us. Or we think we may have to find it, but it's not what we want.
That's exactly right. The more we seek and do, often the less we actually manifest what we want. It's more in the mind and in the heart that we can manifest as opposed to the doing.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's like looking for your keys, to equate looking for a lover and looking for your keys. But it's this search. It's this search drama. Whatever you look for something, you know when you've lost your keys or your brush?
Yes. I lost my car keys this morning.
Yeah, and you look
and
everywhere.
I knew I was already in I've lost my car keys mentality.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to try and get out of that one.
I know, exactly.
In order to find.
Exactly. You've got to just let it go. This is something I used to do when I couldn't find something, predominantly my brush or my car keys, was instead of looking and saying, I've lost my car keys, where are my car keys? I would just say, I know where they are. I'm going to make a cup of tea and like let it go and just affirm I knew where they are. And then you get that little bang, oh, yes. Now I know where they are.
It changes the whole, well, you're telling your subconscious mind.
Yep.
You're giving it a new belief and it manifests whatever you believe.
Yeah. Yes. Look, the same with finding a lover, because I think what you said earlier was really important, that they get stuck in the searching. They get stuck in the belief that there's no men out there, and they focus so hard on trying to find one when they believe there's no men out there. So it's like looking, yes, for the keys in one house when they live in the other house.
Exactly. And I like the belief that you don't go and find love. Love finds you.
Mm.
And the more you love yourself, treat yourself in a way that you would like a lover to treat you. So it already puts you in the having. That way, love will find you.
Yeah, absolutely. What's one of your favourite stories in the book? It looks like a fantastic book, actually. Did this happen to you? Was this your story?
Oh, I've got my own story in the book, warts and all.
Yeah.
Through a divorce and then a disastrous affair and eventually time on my own and then learning finally to love myself.
How long were you married?
18 years.
Wow. How old were you when you got married?
I was probably actually a good age. I was 27.
Yeah. Yeah. Same age as me.
Yeah. But of course, as I say in the book, I picked someone who in many ways we were well suited, but in many ways we weren't. So I knew after my divorce that I needed to change my patterns. And that's another step in the book. And really examining why you may be attracted to a certain type of person. I know I was attracted and they were attracted to me, quite powerful, controlling men, where I was never going to really be myself. I knew I didn't want that again. After going through my storm, I spent quite some time on my own. That's where I learned to love myself again.
So you stayed in a marriage for 18 years. What happened to make you leave?
Like it takes two. So this is where we have to take responsibility. I was very much the rescuer, the, dare I say, a codependent sort of person who,
yeah,
you know, he would very much have the power and dictate how things were going to be. And I tended to go along with it and was always helping him. But I was never really allowing myself to do the things I really wanted to do. I was too busy rescuing my husband and my children constantly.
That's a big one, isn't it? The rescuer. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I was in many ways happy in that role, but on an underlying level I wasn't. And then I entered into a disastrous love affair and left my husband.
Oh, I see. So you entered into this love affair before you broke up with your husband?
Yes.
Ah, so you were seeking empowerment, but you were looking for it outside of yourself. You were looking for it in another man.
So true.
And that's what that's what women do. Well, that's what men do too. They think that I'm going to feel better if I'm with someone.
Yes, that's what we all mistakenly do. And of course, there's no mistakes, only lessons, if you choose to learn the lessons.
Yeah, no mistakes, only lessons.
And, well, I went basically from the frying pan straight into the fire.
Yep.
With someone who was far more controlling and far more dictatorial and was extremely unhappy. So I left that and finally came through on my own, then learned all about myself. And wanted to examine why I'd done what I'd done and take responsibility for that.
Yes. Look, it's so interesting, isn't it? I've seen so many, and I've been one of them, so many of my girlfriends complain about the partners that they're with and change the partner and attract the same person, you know, because they don't
change
the inside, that they keep thinking, if I break up with this guy and attract another guy, then I'll be happy. And then the conversation a few months down the line is the same conversation. It's so interesting.
Because we manifest our beliefs, and if we have underlying beliefs that we're only worthy of this or that all my partners will be forever like this, you know, we just keep manifesting it.
Okay, I've got a girlfriend who, like you, had the story that she was controlled in her relationship, and so she broke up a 12-year relationship to find herself, and she did a bit of soul searching, and then she's been dating ever since, and this was a few years ago, and every man she's attracted has been unavailable. They've been unavailable in some way. They just say, I don't want a commitment, or they're married, or it's just, it's really interesting to watch her, because she's a friend, not a client. And one day I asked her, what do you want? And you know, it's funny, she hadn't thought about that. She keeps dating men and not really affirming what she wants. And she said, I want someone to really commit to me. I want to be the one. I don't want to be the mistress or the girlfriend or the bit on the side. I want to be the one.
And isn't that interesting that she's picking on available people and yet she's saying that?
Exactly.
So this is like subconscious sabotage. On a subconscious level, she doesn't want commitment. And that's actually, in the book, I go into 9 different types of men you should avoid if you do want a long-term, committed, loving relationship. One of them is the unavailable man. Men or women can be unavailable in many ways. They can be unavailable because they're married or in a current relationship. They can be unavailable because they're geographically far away.
Yes, that's it.
People who are basically fearful of commitment will usually pick someone who is somehow unavailable. And of course, you get the emotionally unavailable people as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because she fell in love with this guy who had known her since she was a teenager at school, and he wooed her and said, "I've always been in love with you." But he lived overseas, and so she's been having this relationship with this man who's unavailable because he lives overseas. So she said, "Right, I'm going to pack up, I'm going to move over, I'm going to be there with you." She goes over there. Guess what? He's having affairs with all these other women. He's unavailable. It's just wow to watch it play out. Yeah,
you can actually see this, though, in many ways as a good thing. You need this experience to wake you up.
Yes.
To wake you up to, you know, you're not going to find this ultimate happiness outside of yourself. It's an inside job.
It's an inside job. That's it. That's where all the drama that we go through in our life is pointing to, isn't it, Nicole? It's pointing to the inside. What do you believe? What do you want and what do you believe? And do your beliefs align with what you want?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And something else that I do talk about in the book is being specific about what you want.
Yes.
On a mind, body, spirit level, not just saying, "Oh, I want." To really clarify to yourself what it is, the qualities you want in a partner, the sort of relationship you want. Some people would just like a person to date or, you know, but not necessarily to live with. Not everyone wants to get married.
That's right.
But when you're very clear in yourself what you want, you're halfway to manifesting it. But if you're ambivalent, if you say you want something but on another level you don't, you're not going to create anything that you want or that's worthwhile.
Mm. When you know what you don't want, you know what you do want. So when you were in a marriage that you weren't enjoying, what were you asking for in a relationship? Did you identify that? Like, if he's like that, then I want this.
Oh, look, we went for many years of marriage counselling. There were certain issues that I had always hoped would be resolved, but they never were. He was a workaholic, so he was never really around. That, for me, was something I realised that I really wanted was companionship. That was something that was very important to me in a marriage, and that was something that just didn't happen in that marriage.
Yeah, so that's interesting, isn't it? And what else were you asking for?
Honesty and integrity.
Yep.
A lot of things that were going on in my marriage that until I was out of it, it was only in hindsight, looking at it back at it objectively, that I could really see what was going on.
Yeah.
There are certain things, I suppose, that everybody wants in a relationship that are necessary, I think, for a happy relationship. And a lot of those things were missing for me.
Look, I remember when I was young, not really being a big fan of my father. I found him controlling and opinionated. And I searched the globe. I did a lot of market research as a young girl. And
I like that. I think we should.
Yeah, I was pretty hot, so it was easy for me to do a lot of market research. And then one day I said to my first husband, we looked at each other, we'd moved in together, and he'd done a lot of market research. We'd both been models, so we had the world at our feet. And we looked at each other and we just said, where does it end? You know, where does the market research end? When does the list end of dating and dating and dating? We looked at each other and thought, maybe it's with you. And so that's when we decided we wanted to get married to each other. And I thought, you are so different to my father. I couldn't find someone more different than my father. And then one day I woke up and I thought, oh my God, I married my father.
Yes. And this is actually something else I talk about, is that it may look like it's in a different package.
Yes.
But it usually ends up being the same thing.
Yeah, and you know what the issue was? Similar issue to you. My father was a workaholic and he was not available emotionally or physically. And I married a workaholic that was not available emotionally. He was a completely different person, but it was the same issue. And I just thought, wow, you know, how we keep creating what we expect.
Absolutely, yes. I too, my father was emotionally very distant. When you start excavating this stuff and where your patterns come from, you realise, of course, a lot of it's got to do with your parents. And it's quite normal to go through a period of hating your parents or
pushing against them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it can happen in midlife when you start opening up to a lot of this stuff. I do talk in the book about forgiving your parents too, because, of course, they're just blindly following patterns that were given to them that go back generation after generation. And it's our work in this lifetime to break those patterns.
Yeah, I agree.
And it starts with just awareness, realizing what's happening.
Nothing that makes you more aware than actually diving in and having those relationships. Because when you know what you don't want, you know what you do want. But I also woke up one day hating my father, pushing against who he was. He was opinionated and he was controlling, and realized that I was opinionated and I was...
Absolutely.
I actually was my father.
Well, whatever we really despise in anybody else, it's usually we've usually got a problem with it in ourselves.
Yeah. So I just know now that you can't push against anything and say, I don't like that, and not be it and not attract it into your life. You know, you attract it in the others or you are it. It's just you cannot say, you cannot criticize or judge or hate anyone and not be what you're criticizing. That was a real lesson for
That's
me.
Right.
That came later in life, I have to say.
And isn't that interesting? And when we heal something in ourselves, we realize it doesn't have the charge in us anymore. Someone can be around us who's selfish or controlling, and you just okay, that's just who they are. It doesn't get to you anymore.
Exactly. It doesn't have a charge anymore. Someone can say, you're so bossy and controlling. And I go, aren't I? I am. I know. I'm so bossy and controlling. Doesn't have a charge anymore. Whereas in the past, had someone said that to me, I am so not, because I didn't want to be like my father. So
yes. Now I go into the shadow, and these are the parts of ourselves that we don't want to own. We hide and own denial about. We pretend they're not there. And we all have it. Our selfish side, our controlling side, our hateful side. When we start shining light on our shadow and owning these things about ourselves, when we own it and bring it in as part of ourselves, it no longer controls us. Those parts of ourselves do control us when we're in denial about them. But when we own them, it's no big deal. It's just a part of ourselves.
Yeah, it's no big deal. Fall in love with your parents within you, the part that you hate your parents. I know my daughter, she's fantastic, you know. I say to her, don't be so argumentative. And she looks at me, she says, well, where do you think I get it from? And I go, okay, I'll give you that.
Yes. Oh, it's nothing like our children to teach us all about ourselves.
I love in the book you've got 5 steps to finding love. Have a love affair with yourself. Learn to feel yourself from the inside first. Number one, I absolutely agree with that. That is absolutely number one. Number two, change your beliefs. Make changes on the inside in order to change what's happening on the outside. Tick, I'm like, I'm loving this. Number three, change your patterns. Address those choices you have made in the past and begin to make better choices. Number four, clarify what it is you want. Become clear on your desires and set your goals. Number five, make wise choices in the present. Learn to be happy, present, and true to yourself. Love those.
Oh, thank you. And I'd have to say that those steps are very much in order, I think, of priority too.
Yes.
Because I do think self-love, self-esteem has to come first.
Number one.
We can't really fully love another person or invite another person to fully love us unless we do love ourselves.
Well, we can, and most people do. It's just that we wind up in a whole lot of hot water.
We do, because we're like buckets of water with holes in them. We're empty and we want to be filled up. So we're asking the other person to fill us up, and we're the only ones who can fill our bucket at the end of the day.
Absolutely, I agree. On the back of the book, Nicole, you have, wanting to find a partner is a natural and normal desire, yet for many it is a wish that evades them. So many are searching and cannot find. What have been some of the stories that you've had with your clients that have been happy stories, people that have looked for ages, and how did they find that, and what changed in these people?
I'll tell you about one particular client. She'd had a pattern of picking men who really didn't treat her very well at all. We did quite a lot of work around that. Of course, it all came back to Daddy, who was quite narcissistic, and that was the type she constantly attracted. Even though they came in all shapes and sizes, they didn't seem like the other one, but eventually it would turn into that.
Yeah.
Do you know, just through self-awareness, she gave up the search, began to decide she was just going to enjoy her life exactly as it was without a man in it. And something I often ask clients is, if you knew you were never going to meet anyone again, what would you choose to do with your life?
Yes.
That's where she started from. She changed her job. She found something that was far more aligned with who she was. She was much happier. Since she did that, and I've found this many times with clients and with myself, as soon as someone makes a choice for their highest good around their career, what their life purpose is, often the man comes in after that.
Yeah,
that's
so interesting. I remember when I was living in the eastern suburbs and I was dreaming of living in a more beautiful place, and I went up to the northern beaches looking for somewhere to live and didn't find something. And then about a year later, a girlfriend invited me up to a party. She lived in this incredible place with ocean views galore in Bulgola, and she said, "I'm moving out of here next year. Would you like to move in?" So again, I stopped looking and it came. And so I was living up on the northern beaches, just reveling in the beauty up there. And I said to people, "I feel like I've died and gone to heaven." And I was just loving my life. I was up there for 4 days and I met my second husband. Isn't that amazing? So I was loving my life.
It's amazing.
And he came in.
Yes. And yet it doesn't surprise me. I hear this story over and over again.
Yeah.
As soon as you start really excavating yourself about what you want and then you make a move towards that, that's often when love comes in as well.
Yeah. So happy endings.
A happy ending. Yeah. And for myself as well, after I got divorced and after my disastrous affair that I had for a few years.
What? Let me ask, why do you call it disastrous? Because as you said, there are no failures, there's only lessons. Now, Nicole, what did you learn from the disastrous affair?
It was the universe having a little joke with me.
Yeah.
Me convincing myself that this would finally make me happy and this would make me the person that I was meant to be.
Yep.
But of course, I found myself with someone who was everything, really, that I didn't want. So when I made the move to end this relationship, I found myself on my own, not expecting to be on my own. I think at the age of 47, I didn't know how to be single. I hadn't been single since I was 27, so that was 20 years.
Yeah.
It was a real shock. It was almost like I had to crumble into nothing to recreate myself. In fact, I love this metaphor of the butterfly, the caterpillar goes into a cocoon in order to become a butterfly, but it doesn't just grow wings. Inside that cocoon, it breaks down into just like a DNA soup and then recreates itself. That is transformation. Transformation we have to lose quite a lot, actually. The more we lose, the more we're going to transform. And sometimes we have to lose everything in order to become what we're meant to become.
Yeah.
So I went through incredible feelings of grief and loss for some time. You know, having broken up my family, didn't feel good about that. And I remember waking up one morning and thinking, hang on, suddenly I wasn't this sad, lonely divorcee. I was, this is amazing. My life is a big blank canvas and I can paint on it anything I want.
Mm.
And it's just the way we see things.
It's interesting, isn't it? A girlfriend of mine who got divorced quite a few years ago, we were away on a girls' weekend, and she said that she had this dream. And in this dream, she was in an elevator and the elevator was dropping. And it was really speaking to how she felt about being, when you say that word, divorcee, because she came from a good Catholic family and people didn't get divorced. You got married and you stayed married forever. And when she found herself as a divorcee, just that whole language and whole idea about being someone who had failed, like she had this failure thing. It's like she saw herself in this elevator that was dropping, and it was like she was dropping in her place in society. She had to, again, rebuild herself as a divorcee and start to think of herself as not who she was married to. She's just her. You know, without the labels of married, wife, divorcee, just
that's right.
Just her.
And yet, with divorce, we do lose so much identity and we have to recreate that identity. Something also that happens to women when they get divorced, I don't know whether you experienced it, Karen, a feeling of isolation, because a lot of married people don't want to know you anymore. It's like you're reminding them of what could be possible for them.
Yes. Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I do see where you're coming from. And like everyone's a couple and you're single. But here's the thing. Look, a lot of single girls, all their friends are getting married and then they go to dinner parties and everyone's married but them. I felt more isolated inside my relationship than not, because when I left my first relationship, actually, and my second, I had friends around me again. That when you're a couple, often you do things as couples, and then
that's very true.
Yeah, so I felt more isolated and married than I did.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I definitely felt more reconnected with all my friends
with life,
the marriage. yes, and doing things, doing interesting things.
Yeah.
But you touched before there on, I often see this with women in their 30s. A lot of their friends are getting married
That's
or having
it.
Babies
yeah.
and they're still single.
Yep.
And I've seen a panic set in with them.
Yep.
Karen, I'm sure doing the work that you do and being as aware as you are, how energy works. I always say to people, when a certain thing is happening around you, it's probably going to happen to you, because energy is spiral movement. Whatever's happening around you is sort of coming to you. What happens is, on an energy level, women see their friends get married or have babies and they become more and more despondent, thinking, well, it's never going to be my turn. And of course, whatever we believe, we attract to us, as opposed to turning the belief, the thought around to actually, okay, that means it's getting closer to me.
That's so true. I remember when I was divorced for the first time in my 30s and a single mother, and people looked at me and they said, oh, no one's ever going to fancy you being a divorced single mother with a child. You're no longer marriage material. It's just crazy, these ideas that people have.
And there
are no men out there, and so, you know, you've got no chance. And I remember thinking, that's the norm. That's what society thinks. But I was thinking, you know, the way I think about law of attraction and your thoughts create. And so I made a decision to think, there's plenty of guys out there. There's plenty of men out there. There's someone that wants to be with me exactly how I am.
Absolutely. Mm. And there is someone for everyone.
There is.
And I think a lot of people think, I can't meet anyone because I'm overweight, or because they think of something they don't like about themselves.
Yep.
Or a circumstance they have, like, you know, there might be a single mother or whatever it is. Oh, well, no one's going to love me. I'm not desirable the way I am. And it comes back to self-love again. You know,
yeah.
I'm perfect just the way that I am. My circumstances are perfect and there's someone for me.
It's interesting. I think relationship really allows you to see how much you do love or hate yourself. I have a young friend, her mum's my friend, and she is gorgeous. She would love herself, I would say. She would think she would love herself, but she just can't find a man. And every time she comes up against someone who she thinks he's it, she finds something to complain about. It's not right. No, this is not right about him. It sounds like she's really picky, but she's starting to panic because she's mid-30s, late-30s, and she really wants to get married and have babies. But every single man she goes out with, there's always something wrong with them.
Yes, there could be any myriad of reasons that's happening. I've met many people who say they want a relationship. On a conscious level, they want it, but on a subconscious level, they're sabotaging themselves. Sabotage could be a belief underlying at a very core level of, if I do meet someone, then I'm going to have to give up who I am.
Mm-hmm.
There could be all sorts of fears underneath that will ensure on a subconscious level she won't manifest a relationship.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? She did say to me once, she sees her mother, who's really happy, but single, older woman. She says, I don't want to end up like my mother. I don't want to be old and alone. And I said to her once, but your mum's actually really happy. And so in her mind, being alone is not being happy. Being in a relationship is being happy. But at the same time, she doesn't want to end up alone. So maybe she's focusing too much on the being alone.
Yes, or focusing too much on what she doesn't want as opposed to what she does want.
That's right.
And I think we mentioned this before, the subconscious mind doesn't understand negative. So when you say, I don't want to end up like my mother, or your subconscious mind is hearing, like my mother.
Yes.
So, you know, you have to change that thought to, I want a loving, committed, long-term relationship. Don't include your mother even in it. Often, whenever we focus on what we don't want, if we're thinking of it in a negative way, Mother Teresa said, I will never attend an anti-war rally. I'll only attend a peace rally.
This is a really important part of creating what you want, is to focus on what you want and not what you don't want. And a lot of people do that, Nicole. There's so many, like, that's the reason I have this show, is to educate people to realizing that when you complain about something and you beat the drum of it, you're going to get more of it. It's like,
the more we do it, then the more it just reinforces and the pattern just goes round and round and round.
I remember a girlfriend, she had broken up with her husband. She had her childhood sweetheart woo her from overseas and tell her how beautiful she was. And she had this affair with this guy, and she felt guilty, and she was going through all sorts of stress. And she complained and complained and complained about everything that was wrong with her husband to try and justify why she had fallen in love with the childhood sweetheart, was telling her she was beautiful and he'd always been in love with her and how could he have let her go and all that sort of thing. But she kept complaining about what was wrong with her husband, and I asked her, what do you want? And she didn't understand the question because she couldn't focus on what she wanted because she was so focused on what she didn't want. And I kept asking her, what do you want? And she just looked at me blankly and kept going on with what she didn't want. Again, what do you want? And she looked at me as if to say, I don't have the right to want. Like, I don't have the right to want something, but I have the right to complain about what I've got.
Oh, I think that says it all about so much of society.
Yeah. You know,
we love to talk about the news and what's wrong in the world and what's wrong in politics, but we don't actually want to talk about simply what's right.
Yeah, what we want. Yeah.
Yes, your friend, I'm sure with the old love coming back into her life, I talk in my book about infatuation, or what psychologists call limerence, which is that beginning period of the relationship where we feel absolutely high and we feel and we idolize the other person, they idolize us. What's really happening is you're falling back in love with yourself.
That's it.
And of course, we have that ability to do that with ourselves all the time if we choose that, but we lose it. I don't know, in my marriage, I lost that ability. It became about everybody else and doing for everyone else and not ever thinking about myself, like so many of us in that generation. You know, you're a good woman if you're always giving and caring and thinking about others and not giving to yourself. And it was only really in midlife that I discovered the self-love and the self-esteem has to come number one before anything.
It's so important. It's so important. And I think that as mothers and housewives and, I don't know, even husbands, stressed out husbands going to work to earn the money, or even the mothers going to work to earn the money, when we get so stressed out about the details and what we have to do, we actually forget to look at ourselves and say, hey, you're amazing. And then someone comes along and says, hey, you're amazing. And you go, oh, my God, I'm in love with you.
And look at, this is one of the exercises I say in my book, look at yourself in the mirror every day and say to yourself, I love you. And, you know, I say this to my clients, and I have so many people who say to me, I can't do that. They are so repelled by the idea to say I love you. And I say in the book, this is not narcissism, because narcissism is something totally different, but self-love, honouring the self, is so important.
It's so important, Nicole. It's so it's number one priority in life.
And of course, when we do this, we stop looking for the other person to always validate and affirm us. And so we put less pressure on a relationship if we're honouring ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely number one. Fall in love with yourself first, and then if somebody comes in that loves you as much as you, you're doing well.
Absolutely. Well, it's a bonus on top, isn't
it? It's a bonus on top.
It's the icing on the cake.
Yeah. Look, I just think that message cannot be said enough. I could spruik that message all day. Self-love, 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 self-appreciation. There are so many gurus and teachers, healers out there saying it, but it really can't be said enough. Every morning and every night, write in your book of positive appreciation what you love about yourself, what you think is great about yourself. Actually, you do this in your work. This is a lot of the work I do with people too. They say, I want this and I want that and I want that. And you bring it back to self and you say, well, what is it about yourself that you like? And they go, oh. You say, how can you attract something into your life that you want when you don't appreciate or respect yourself? How are you going to give something to someone that you don't even like?
Yeah. It also comes down, Karen, to gratitude. As we were saying before, we all focus on what we don't want or what we don't have in our lives. Mm. So, for example, back to the case of a 30-something-year-old woman whose friends are all getting married and having babies and she's feeling lonely and left behind. This is something else I say is, okay, what's good about your life? Because if we're starting to focus on, I just want to marry and have a baby, and all of a sudden the rest of your life looks bleak and empty. But if you were to really look at your life as a single 30-something, there's many positives that you have in your life. You know, you have freedom, you probably have a great social group, you've got the time and energy to fully put into your career, and it may not be what you want, but what I encourage them to do is start writing a gratitude list every day about what is in their life, because it puts you into the having and you're not focusing on what you don't have. The more you're thankful for, the more the universe is just going to keep sending to you things to be grateful for.
It's interesting. I had a client years ago, and for years she complained about not finding the one to get married to and have a baby, and then eventually she did. But she wasn't focusing on what you were saying, Nicole. She wasn't focusing on what she was grateful for, because the urge to get married and have a baby was so huge that initially when it all happened, it was fantastic. But she went back into that state of complaint because she manifested what she wanted, but she hadn't cleaned up her thoughts about just loving life as it is.
Yeah,
just loving what you have as it is.
Yeah.
Instead of striving to make something happen to make life better, just see what's great about your life.
Such an important point, Karen. We get fixed on the idea, if I have this, then I'm going to be happy.
Mm.
of course, most of us, when we really dearly want something, we get it. We may be thrilled for a little while, and then reality sets in again, and we go back to however we were before.
The reality of your patterned learned behaviour, your patterned subconscious thoughts.
So the old thing, it's the journey, not the destination.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
Enjoy the journey. Because often when we get to the destination, we realise, actually, I'm not as fulfilled as I thought I was with this. I can honestly say, I mean, I was so clucky, I couldn't wait to have a child. I talk about this in my book. and the reality setting in of what it really was like, suddenly giving up career, being at home, feeling tired, feeling like I'd lost my identity completely. I remember the realization that, okay, I wished for this, I've got it, and I would never take it. I love my kids dearly, but we do get stuck on a thought of everything's going to be just fantastic when I have this one thing I want.
That's it.
Whether we have a baby or fall in love with someone, reality always hits.
Now she looks back on those single days and they're like heady for her. Those days where she was crying out to get married and have a baby and she was single and free to go out, go anywhere, do anything, travel, you know, she was free. And now she looks back on those days.
Yeah.
Married with child and says, oh, they were such great days.
It's so true, isn't it? The grass is always greener.
Oh, that's so funny. I know.
Karen, something we probably should touch on, because it's such a big thing these days, is the whole online dating scene.
It's fascinating, the whole online dating thing, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? I do know people who've successfully found someone to love online.
Yeah, I know lots of people.
Online.
Yeah.
I also know plenty of people who've had not so great experiences as well. But I do talk about it in Five Steps to Finding Love. What I've come to the conclusion with online dating is I think you have to be pretty thick-skinned, because if you think about what you're doing, the online dating scene's very intense because it's just full of people who literally are looking for a relationship.
Yeah.
Or some are looking just for dating or
a good time.
Just for time. And of course, there's a lot of confusion about that. I do still feel with the online dating scene, I suggest to people that sure, go ahead and do it, but don't rule out having a social life as well where you're going to meet people. I have a number of clients who are addicted to online dating.
Really?
It constantly. They'll see someone, they'll date with them for 3 months, that ends, they'll get straight back online, then date a number of people, another 3 months or 6 months, that doesn't work out, then they're straight back online.
You know what you about it, Nicole? I feel like it takes the magic out of life, because you know how when you line up with your happiness, when you just decide you're just going to love your life, magic happens. Like all those desires that you've got tucked away, you know, I want the partner, I want this, I want that, I want, they will magically occur. And so the online dating thing to me tends to take the magic out of it. Like you just never know where you're going to be when you meet someone. It could be standing at the bus stop. It could be at the friend's wedding. It could be at the friend's funeral. It could be during a work interaction. And that to me is, to me,
and
that's
magic. And
you
need to get out there. Mm. So it's much better that you develop yourself, like join a club or get an interest. Just get out more and
join a charity.
Yeah, whatever it is, do something that you love, because also, if you're doing something you love, you're more likely to meet someone with similar values to yourself as well.
That's right.
Or, or have something in common, like if you're into sailing, you'll meet someone who you can spend all your spare time with if you love to sail.
That's it. Oh, darling, this book sounds like such a fabulous book. It's a must read, I think, for anybody who wants to understand love, whether it's self-love or relationship love. It's a big topic. It's a big conversation. Lots of people are having it. I know that when I was young, it occupied my headspace probably 99%. Of the time, thinking about who I was going to fall in love with and who was going to fall in love with me. So where can people find out more about you and the book and get a copy?
It's online. It's an ebook. It's going to be translated into Spanish.
Wow, fantastic. How did that happen?
Well, a lovely Colombian lady approached me who's a translator, and she said to me, I'm really interested in translating your book. And I thought, how strange, because the book has its own Facebook page. It does have quite a lot of South American fans. So I thought, oh, this sounds like the right thing. In Australia, it's available in Angus and Robertson, Bookworld, Holistic Page, The Nile. It's also available on my website, The Constant Reader Crow's Nest, Desire Books Manly, Destiny, Neutral Bay, Glebe Books Glebe, Humphreys Bookstore Manly, and Oracle Books Mothman.
Wonderful, Nicole. And I ask all my authors that come on the show to provide a couple of copies for our subscribers of FM 99.3.
More than happy to do that.
you're a subscriber of FM 99.3 and you'd be interested in five steps to finding love, or you know somebody that you think it could help, it's all about self-love and changing the conversation, give me a call and I'll get Nicole to send you a copy. Thanks so much, Nicole, for coming on the show. It's been such a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Karen. It's been lovely talking to you.
I think it's a really important subject, this whole relationship thing. It's been such a joy to talk with you.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Karen. I'll leave you with some words of Wayne Dyer. He says, "You cannot be lonely if you like the person you're alone with."
Wonderful. Yeah. Thanks.
It says it all, really.
It says it all, doesn't it? Thanks again, Nicole. Bye for now.
Thanks, Karen. Bye.
You've been listening to me, Karen Swain, chatting with Nicole Baylis about her new book, Five Steps to Finding Love, a holistic guide for women, here on FM 99.3.